You are now tuned in to Let's Talk Ferrella, and this is a new segment I like to call Cypher Something. I have some guest stars with me that I'm going to introduce you after this amazing beat. Shouts out to Bob. Blah! Hey, yo, what's up, everybody? This is Let's Talk Ferrella. And now that you guys know that this is no longer Let's Talk Ferrella, this is a podcast I'm introducing on the side of Hydro Affirmations. I'm going to have influential people on here, people with real game, people out there making shit happen, or they may have already made things happen. On my first episode for this season, I have a longtime friend, high school graduate, David. He's here with me, and I'm going to go ahead and let David introduce himself and give you guys some feedback on who he is and what he does. So first off, go ahead, David.
Hello, everyone. Well, my name is David Cruz, and I sometimes go, my alter ego is Zerk.
Zerk?
Zerk.
Why is that your alter ego?
My last name backwards.
Okay. So we got young Zerk. If you hear that, that's what he go by on the streets.
Zerk. I'm a Stocktonian. I went to high school here with our fellow friend, and we graduated together. Then I went off to college, where, man, college was crazy.
What school did you go to?
I went to UC Santa Cruz.
UC Santa Cruz, that's where David Cruz went.
Banana slugs. The banana slugs, yeah.
How was like college life?
College life was crazy fun. It was also frustrating. There was plenty of anxiety, but I think that everything else made up for the intensity of what school really was. Being part of the swim team for 3 years, although I didn't finish none of the three seasons, but I was in the team for 3 years.
I remember you was in polo in high school, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I do recall that.
I was going to do water polo, but it wasn't an NCAA team. Mm-hmm. So it was just a team, it was a university club. So I decided to do swimming instead, which was an NCAA, it was a Division III.
Okay.
Swimming against those Stanford people were...
Those some other
titans,
shit.
Dude. They're titans out there. I thought I was big, 6'2", 230 pounds. Man, these people are 6'5", big, like, they're one of their thighs is the size of both of my legs.
Oh, huge you those people. Is big-ass Europeans.
They're
that's
huge
why.
People. swim team. I went in as a business management and economics. A year later, I completely swapped that to linguistics, and that's where I found my new obsession in language.
Okay.
I didn't know I was obsessed with language until I found out that I didn't want to continue doing economics, and in one day, on the day where you have to select your classes for the following year, that's when I decided I'm going to do a new major. I thought it was nice and short. Turned out that it was short and hard. A lot of all-nighters because of that, but I finished it in 3 years. Then I did a second major, which was politics, and okay. Then that's when I found my desire, my true passion into working within politics, international relations, communities, and whatnot. Because I found out through the methodology of being able to dissect language, that's how you actually are able to have a proper expression in your laws that govern people, because language is what governs people.
Okay, right? 100%.
Because how do you create a law? By writing sentences. If you're able to dissect how the language really works and what the sentences really say, as opposed to just the surface meaning, then you're able to control all other aspects of that law that many people are not even aware. And that's why there's all these loopholes in laws and whatnot. It's because of the exact way in which the laws are written. So through linguistics, that's where I found like my actual passion in working within law and language, communities and so on, specifically for that reason. We're all governed by language. We communicate by language. So why not study something that you apply to every single day?
Yeah, you know? 100%.
And after that, well, I graduated.
That's a good perspective.
I graduated that. After 5 years. Mm-hmm. And then like every other college student, you don't find any work within your major.
That's majority of college students these days, unfortunately.
It's ridiculous. It took me about 7 months to find an internship. I found a couple internships doing language labs. But because my Spanish is Mexican Spanish, many of these labs discriminated against my Spanish.
Discriminated against the Spanish that you knew?
Because they were looking for individuals who would naturally comprehend Castilian Spanish, even though Spanish is Castilian. But they meant Spanish from Spain.
What?
Yeah. I have the emails, dude. I have the emails. And I sent I had gotten an interview. I forgot what company. I had gotten an interview for an internship for a language lab in recognizing certain types of expressions in Spanish and being able to translate them into English and just seeing all these nuances between language. So when I applied, you know, they gave me, they were like, cool, you got an interview and all that stuff. And then they sent a follow-up email. They were like, so just wondering what type of Spanish do you have, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, I've had formal education in English and Spanish since I was a kid. So my schools have been bilingual, but my Spanish is regional to Mexico City to be specific. And they're like, oh, sorry. Well, we're looking for people who speak the Spanish from Spain. Nothing against you, blah, blah, blah. And so I sent
them. That's everything against you, though.
And I sent them such a good email. I was like, as language scientists, that you guys claim to be, how do you are wanting to contract an individual whose first language is not Spanish but has only studied Spanish as a second language, and that doesn't even know the nature of how language really works? So they were just looking for individuals who have had, because they also asked me, they're like, have you had any exposure to Spanish from Spain? Obviously, movies, I have family that family from Spain married into my family. Mm-hmm. There is, you know, TV shows, all these different things. Like, Spanish media is very well diverse. But they were like, no, we're just looking for somebody who's had exposure with Spanish. And I was like, well, you guys are not real scientists, you know? They were not real language scientists. So in my head, I was like, how are you going to be looking for somebody to identify Spanish expressions when they don't even understand the nature of the language? Like, for example, it's like me trying to translate the shit hit the fan. If I translate the shit hit the fan in Spanish, that shit is not gonna fly. It's not a literal translation. You have to find an equivalent that is in Spanish. Yeah. And bilingual people whose second language is Spanish and they've only been exposed to Spanish for about a year, they won't even understand where these expressions come from, because much of the understanding can be contextual, can be historical, you know? Like, so it to me was troubling. But after that little unwholesome experience, then I found a fellowship doing it was an immigration law internship where I was serving undocumented youth, guiding them through to resources, whether that is for school, whether that is for business, whether that is just basic needs, etc., community resources and whatnot. And that lasted for about a year. And there is where I found out that a lot of these nonprofits who are catering to the Spanish-speaking community always cater, but in English. They never market their services in the language that the people actually speak. So they're tossing all this information, they're tossing all these resources and help and helpful guides and whatever to these people in a language where they won't even know how to read it. So what's the point of flushing all this out if your audience won't even know what it says? It's like me giving you a book in Chinese and be like, this is the secret to life. Find out what it says.
Yeah, that wouldn't help me out at all. So how the hell did you deal with not being chosen? And Spanish is your first language.
Right. So no. Where I wasn't chosen, that was just, I let it go, and then I found the internship. And then all this internship where I had many people, well, because they were youth, most of them spoke English, but the majority didn't. Mm-hmm. So all these legal memorandums that I would be writing and everything, like, to me, it would be like, dude, like, this is not going to work for them because they're not even going to understand what I'm writing. And so I asked my supervisor if I could start writing these in Spanish. And so I did, and I would start having calls, follow-up calls, along with an immigration lawyer, you know, telling them about their cases and everything, about their possible ways of, you know, of dealing with their situation and whatnot. But because of that, that's where I found out that translation and interpretation was really needed in the community. Because even these organizations that say that they're helping the community, they're just flushing all these resources in a language that is not understood. So in my perspective, they're just creating these resources just to waste money, even if it's not effective. So that's when I found out. That's when I was dude.
That's honestly a lot of things, dude. That's honestly a lot of fucking shit. That's honestly powerful. Fuck.
And so after that, I just decided, I was like, well, when this is over, I'm just going to start freelancing for translation interpretation. And I started freelancing, still without a job lined up. Thankfully, the shop, the smoothie shop that we're in right now.
The smoothie shop we're in called what?
Edge Nutrition. Was open. My sister and I managing it, owning it. And so that was helping me to offset my expenses as my business in translation interpretation was taken off. And at first, dude, it would start with like $50, just one gig a month, $50. Mm-hmm. And then every 2 months, $100. And that was in 2019. And then in 2020, I came into this opportunity to merge my freelancing company into a cooperative.
Okay.
And so I merged my company into a cooperative, and from there on, from 2020, 21, 2022, my business has been growing exponentially. In 2020, I only made $400, but in 2021, I made $4,000, so I 10x my business.
Yeah, fuck
and
yeah.
And this year, my goal is to make it all the way to $40,000. So I'm trying to 10x again. However, I think right now, in April, as of April, I think I'm at $15,000.
That's amazing.
I think I'm almost near halfway done with my goal to 10x my business again this year. But I don't know, it seems really cool. Things right now are winding down, but I don't know, things are coming up again as these contracts are ending, new ones are coming. So hopefully the momentum keeps going for the rest of the year, and we'll see where it's going.
The momentum will keep going. The business will exceed.
Hell yeah, that's right.
It will. Bro, that's amazing. Like, regardless of how you look at it, you're seriously making money off of a language that's native to you. So regardless of what the people didn't want to hire you for, you got the paperwork to prove that, bro, I'm getting paid off my voice. Mm-hmm. So what's your business called? Like, if somebody wants to get in contact with you and they want to learn how to speak Spanish, how do they go about doing that?
So you can look me up through the brand name of Radiate Consulting Bay Area.
Radiate Consulting Bay Area. Mm-hmm. Is how people find you.
That's the brand name of the cooperative. The company's name is actually Starlight Strategies, but we work as Radiate Consulting Bay Area.
That's amazing,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah.
And it's like you did all that. So did you get to that position with your degree, or did you just grind to that position without it?
I want to say that I would not have gone into what I'm doing right now had it not been because of my degrees. Because when I was doing economics, I wasn't thinking about like, yeah, I'm going to interpret for conference and all that stuff. I'd be like, I'm going to work for an enterprise, figure out what their stocks are and play with their stocks and so on. Like, that was my image of what I was going to be doing. But things change, and when linguistics came about and things just started happening as after graduation, it just, every step just led me into, that was like the door that just naturally opened. And it wasn't that I was seeking it or that I was forced into it, but that was what was like given. You know, it was this is the pathway. You can decide to go off and whatever. We're not going to guarantee you what's going to happen if you go off the path. But right here, you can see an insured thing of what your future may be. You know, if you keep working, if you keep doing your things. So I don't know, like I always see it. If things given easily, they're meant for you. If you have to, you know, just barely scrape off to make it, like, no, like, wait a little longer and it'll come to you. Like, I recently, well, not recently,
but 1,000%.
But in 2020, I applied to grad school. Mm-hmm. And I applied to 3 universities. I applied to University of British Columbia, University of Ottawa, and Middlebury Institute of Language and of Language. And I applied for my master's in linguistics.
Uh-huh.
It was one of the most nerve-wracking periods of my adult life, because there were so many things going on. You know, I was thinking about moving out of the country. One, I was about to take loans, or I was about to empty my bank accounts just so I could pay for my visa, so I could pay for housing, for tuition. It was only gonna be a year, and I was still not gonna have a job guaranteed. And then I would have to come back to the United States or hustle really hard to force myself to get a work visa in Canada and stay out there, you know? And so I got, University of British Columbia told me that out of the 10,000, there were 10,000 people, about 10,000 people who applied for my master's, and that I had made it to the second round. And on a regular year, first rounders and second rounders get admitted into the university, because University of British Columbia is a full ride university. So if you get in, you get a full ride.
Mm-hmm.
On a regular year, first rounders and second rounders get admitted into the university. But because it was a COVID year, the beginning of COVID, and because a lot of funding was cut from the universities, because students weren't going into like for in-class sessions and all that stuff, they didn't have enough funding to support the same amount of students that they would in a regular year. Therefore, they were denying my admission.
Because they couldn't afford give you a full ride.
Exactly. So,
wow.
So University of British Columbia told me no. They're like, part of the 4.5% of applicants who get this offer of second round. But unfortunately, you're not part of the 1.something% that of the first rounders. So they're like, even though you're part of the top 5% of our selection, it's only the 1.5 or the 2 point something that are going to get in because we don't have enough funding. And so, you know, that was one that
I wouldn't take that as a denial. Definitely a technicality due to COVID, because if COVID didn't happen, you would have been at British Columbia.
I would have been in.
So that does not count as a loss, bro.
That was one.
Wow.
And then Middlebury was an intense one. It was a long ass application, but it was the first university that told me no. Well, like within 2 weeks of turning in my application, they said no, and I was like, damn, am I really that bad of a candidate?
Why? Like, then, what is that, like a prestigious school?
It's a Middlebury is a really good language school, and they contract with the military for their language programs.
Oh wow!
So they have a lot of military personnel or government personnel going into the university for their programs. And so it's a really good university, and I went in for translation and interpretation, and then they told me no. I was like, fuck you guys. And then a month later, I get an email from a professor at University of Ottawa, and I get it in Spanish. And I was like, why am I getting an email in Spanish from a professor in Ottawa?
Yeah.
And he was like, hey, I want to meet with you because I have a couple questions about your application. Uh-huh. And I was like, fuck, like,
what could it possibly be?
Right. I was like, you could just tell me yes or no, you know?
Yeah.
So we set up the meeting, and he just starts asking me questions about like what I wanted to do. And so I started telling him, you know, like the dissection of language, politics, my delirium with language and all that stuff. And so he was like, okay, well, I understand what you want. You want to do for language forensics. That's what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
When you're dissecting language, trying to figure out what it means and compared to Spanish and all that stuff, because I've been intrigued into the way that language pairs up, in the way in which the mind pairs up different languages when you're translating and interpreting, mm-hmm. specifically in law, right? Because the second that you change something from English to Spanish and it doesn't, and you can just change a preposition like with, to, for, on, you know, and the whole meaning of the sentence changes, and it can have like dramatic repercussions in a contract or in a treaty or something.
Yeah.
So I was very interested in that. And at University of Ottawa, my application, they asked for some papers, like some written papers, like proof that, you know, that I've been studying linguistics and all that stuff. And I turned in a final essay on a language in Mexico called Otomi. And it is an indigenous language, one of the 65 recognized languages in Mexico, that is one of the most widely spoken. But when I wrote it, I was just like, my fascination is with syntax, with the way that language is expressed. It's expressed and the mechanics that carry on with it.
Yeah.
So I did the same thing in that paper. I dissected the language Otomi from the basics and all that stuff. And so he started asking me about it. And he was like, look, like, we don't have the program that you're looking for, but we're interested in this type of essays. Like, if you can do this type of essays in the program, we'll accept you. And I was like, well, you got it. You don't have to say anything else. I can study that, you know, like I can continue my study on Otomi. Like, if you want me to continue doing this language, like, for fuck's sake, like, hell yeah. Like, I'm not going to take away this opportunity.
Yeah.
So I told him, I was like, I can. Yeah, sure. I'll redirect my focus in my studies into the recording of dying languages. And so I sent them another proposal for the master's program, and then I got admitted. And then I cried for that one. I cried because I was like, fuck, I got in, you know, like, oh shit, like I deserved it.
Yeah, hell yeah.
And then actually that night I went to San Francisco on scooters and celebrate. I was just like riding scooters at night in San Francisco after that. I gotta celebrate this.
So you went to SF to ride scooters?
Yeah, just to celebrate that I got into grad school.
Oh my gosh, dude, it's so dangerous out there these days.
But after was like the logistics were just they were just nonsense. Like the school was no longer offering immigration aid. So because I'm international, coming from the United States, there, you know, there's immigration stuff that you have to deal with, right?
Yeah.
And so the school usually would offer that help and they would guide you through that. But for some reason, the school had cut those services. So you had to find your own lawyer. You had to file your own things. And so, like, you had to do the research on your own for everything. And then housing, if you didn't have a loan, because I was going to front the money. They were like, if you don't have a loan, you have to front your housing for the year, which is about $15,000, and the first semester of the university, which is another $8,000. So basically immigration, for them to give me my visa, they're like, well, you have to front in basically $24,000. And that's not gonna guarantee that you get a visa. So I was like, how am I gonna, yeah, because you getting into the university doesn't really guarantee that immigration is gonna let you through. They're two different entities. And so it is assumed that because you're admitted into the university, that immigration will let you in, but they don't have to. And so if they find something that just doesn't really make sense, then they can just be like, sorry, we're not going to give you your...
And let me guess, that 24K is non-refundable, of course.
No, the housing is not going to be refundable, and then the tuition is not refundable.
So 24 bands... To maybe
get a visa.
What, and where is the school located?
University of Ottawa.
Ottawa?
Ottawa, Canada.
Wow. Yeah. But it's like, after you got hit with all those technicalities, you was like, bro, fuck this shit, dude?
Yeah, basically, because I was like, well, I'm not going to front $24,000 just for a maybe. Like, if I'm going to front $24,000... It's going to have to be a decisive yes. Right.
A guarantee.
And so I decided to forego my opportunity. And then that's when this opportunity to merge my business of translations and interpretations with the cooperative occurred. And so afterwards, that's when I merged it. And then that's when the business started going forward. So, like, had I not really been denied at University of British Columbia, at Middlebury, and had I not foregone my admission in Ottawa, I wouldn't have established my business. And now I can say that I can front without having to worry. I can front the tuition for the year and I'll just have to worry about living expenses. So now I'm approaching grad school a little bit more smart. I don't want to do international because now I know I already know that I'm a good candidate for grad school because I already got into one university, 100%. Even though I didn't go. Now I have the financial stability to support that journey. And three, I have the business to, even if I'm not really employed, I have a business that is constantly giving me new projects that probably is going to give me at minimum $100 a week, you know? And who's not going to have, you know, I mean, I can make a call $100, $200 and boom, I just have $200 that week. And yeah. I only have to worry about one call and the rest is just my schooling, you know, why not?
So now that you're at this point, do you think, because I'm a huge believer in no matter what you're working towards, 9 times out of 10, if it doesn't work out, it's because you have something better on the way.
Right.
Like think about all those doors and all those technicalities and how you said earlier, if you want something so hard that it's not working in your favor, it won't work out for you.
Right.
But then your business, a language that comes naturally, worked out for you.
Right.
And now it's like, okay, now you got at the point where you got the capital and you got the business and you still have opportunities from the business.
Right.
It's like you're in the boat of, do I continue forward with the business and just grow and say, fuck this? Or are you gonna put all that capital into education? And it's like, okay, if you put all that capital into your education, what benefits will overlook the benefits of pushing your job forward and just working on that?
Well, I've thought about it. I was like, what if I just continue working and not go to grad school? But I just don't, like, my mind is not gonna be fulfilled until I get those, like, questions about, like, those further questions about language that I had lingering when I graduated. Until they get answered, I'm not gonna be in peace. And I know that when I go into grad school, because my major is theoretical, linguistics is all about language theory, there will be even more questions that will arise. But, like, to me, that this is why I like language, because it, there's just so many components of it that you can just get lost in, that I never get bored. And even when I'm translating my contracts or when I'm translating media and all that stuff, when I translate poems, poems are so interesting. Because, for example, in English, you have words, like, for example, there was a line that said something along the lines of, like, what do the otter people think? Instead of saying, what do the other people think, they use otter, right? Uh-huh. Otter instead of other. So in Spanish, you're like, how am I gonna use... So the word for otter in Spanish is really not... that it does not sound the same as to what they want me to rhyme it with.
How do you say otter in Spanish?
Otter is zarigüeya.
Arigüeya?
Zarigüeya. No, hurón. Sorry, hurón.
Hurón?
Hurón.
Is how you say otter.
Yeah, otter is hurón.
Okay, and
so
then...
how do you rhyme otter? How do you make hurón have a similar meaning as other? If the word for other is otro, so hurón and otro, otter and other, they have to have, like, similar meaning. So do I keep the name of the animal, or do I change the animal for something that rhymes and keep, as long as I keep an animal and it has the similar meaning as, or you can get the meaning of otro in the sentence, or you just leave it as is. So what I did was I had to look, I don't remember what animal I used.
God damn.
I had to use another animal that would sound like otro, so I could actually keep up with the rhyme of the poem. So, like, things like that, or like also the intricacies of, like, how do you translate this shit hit the fan? You know, like, if la mierda golpeó el ventilador, that makes no sense in Spanish. You're just being vulgar. You know,
yeah.
It's like you're just being vulgar right there. So if, even within what I'm doing, like, I'm constantly going back into what I learned in college. And that's how I know that what I'm doing is in the right lane, because I'm still able to match what I've been wanting to study all this time and what I want to keep on studying. And so I want to take all this experience in translation and interpretation and language tutoring into grad school with a more applicational understanding of theory. So that's basically, I don't know, I can just talk a bunch about language. It's a
delirium. Dude, so you super duper love language. What do you know, more than two languages?
Well, Spanish is my first one, my L1. English is my second, my L2. And then I speak French. I'm not completely fluent. I'm just proficient in French. And actually today I was following up with French, with the French elections in French, of course. So I was watching the news and all that stuff in French, so I could follow the French elections, because I don't have anybody to practice French with. So I'm just like, I need to keep my mind thinking in French if I want to keep the language. So I need to find ways. So like sometimes I'm like jamming music in French in my car. Like I need to find like music that I can, that I can sing along with. So I could practice my pronunciation, so I could learn new words. And so like sometimes like you'll see me for like an hour just like on repeat with the same song until like I remember the lyrics and I can just sing without looking at the lyrics. And that's how I practice my French. And then now I recently started taking Arabic. Arabic is a really interesting language and very, very simple in my opinion. If you want a complicated language, it's Turkish. Turkish is complicated as shit. But Arabic is very, very simple. The second that you start noticing the patterns in pronunciation with their symbols, the rest is just like reading Spanish. Like it has only one sound.
Okay, so if I hit you with assalamu alaikum, what would you say?
I'm still learning sounds. I'm still learning. The only thing that I know for sure that I know how to say well is ina mutarjim jadid, which is I'm a good translator. And I found out that I was good at saying that when I was practicing my Arabic because I was on my way to Alaska. I had a layover in Seattle, and so from Seattle to Fairbanks, I was watching The Dissident. And I had forgotten my headphones. So I was just watching The Dissident without the headphones, and the only thing that had subtitles was when they were speaking in Arabic, because the movie was in English, so they're not gonna put subtitles.
Yeah.
And so I only knew what the fuck was really happening when the things in Arabic were going on. And afterwards, there was like, it was like me on the window seat, and then my friend in the center, and then there's this other dude. And apparently he had been looking at my screen. Cause I'm like, dude, you're like two seats over. How the hell are you looking at me? You know?
Motherfuckers not minding their fucking
business. He goes like, oh, how do you like The Dissident? And I was like, in my head, I'm like, how do you even know that I was watching The Dissident?
He was staring at your fucking lap the whole time.
Yeah. So he was looking, and so I was like, well, you know, I mean, I forgot it. I forgot my headphones. So I just know what happened. And so he started asking me a few questions about the movie. And he was telling me that he liked it and all that stuff. And I was like, yeah, it's a cool movie and all that. And so I was like, well, I really just picked it because of Arabic. And I'm trying to learn Arabic and all that. And so he was like, oh, okay, well, what can you say in Arabic? And he was like, I'm Egyptian. I speak Arabic. And so I was like, okay. Well, I mean, this is the thing that I know for sure, and that's because Duolingo has a sentence. So like, I'm a good translator, and I was like, this is the sentence that I'm gonna imprint in my head, mm-hmm. and sure enough, I was like, ina mutajim jadid, and he was like, wow, that sounds good, and then in my head, I'm like, yes, like,
bro, you need to I'll tell you right now, if cool, if you dealing with some Arabics, assalamu alaikum, you say wa alaikum assalam, it's pretty much like. Peace be with you. Thank you. Peace be with you as well. I know that Wula means like swear to God. So like if you hear them conversating, they're like, David, Wula. That means like swear to God. I know that Leish means why. Like
I know that Wa means and.
What?
Wa.
Wa means and?
And.
See? Look, I just gave you a couple more definitions. Only because I had a best friend who was Arabic, and his name was Ishmael Aralahim. So his family, like the whole dynamic, praying all day, meeting his mom and his sisters, and they would cover their head. It's like certain words they would say all the time. And I'm like, yo, why you keep saying lesh to your mom? He's like, oh, I'm telling her why. I'm like, then how come when she yells at you, you say wula? He's like, because I'm telling her mom, I swear to God. And I'm like, oh, okay.
That's hilarious.
So add those to your book, but honestly, dude, that's honestly aspiring as hell.
And so like, and now I know how to write my name too, in Arabic. That was when I was learning the alphabet, I was like, I gotta learn how to write my name too. So I know how to write my name. They don't have a V.
A letter V?
They don't have a V. They use a U.
So
my name is David. In Arabic is Dawood.
Dawood?
Dawood.
Honestly, that does make sense. Damn. Okay, I just learned something new today as well. So are you gonna pursue the business or are you gonna pursue school?
That's right, I hella sidetracked.
Well, nah, you're good.
I'm gonna keep pursuing my business, but I think I'm not gonna do this round of applications. I'm gonna wait one more year. So in 2023, so fall of 23, that's when I'm submitting my applications again.
Fuck yeah.
So by fall of 24, hopefully, 24, I'm doing grad school. This time I'm aiming to do Boston University. I'm trying to do Boston University. That's because they have a good linguistics program. I have two friends from college who went there for their master's in linguistics as well. So I've been looking at that. I've also been looking for other similar programs, but University of Oregon is also on my watch. I don't know if I want to do Berkeley again since I got denied for my undergrad. I may do Berkeley just for shits and giggles.
UC Berkeley?
UC Berkeley. I may just do UC Berkeley for shits and giggles. You never know. And then I may... That's it. I think I'm just looking at those. Oh, and University of Washington. Yeah, those are the ones that I'm...
2024?
2024.
Okay, then you're just going to grind on the business, gain more capital, and do it like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, I mean... I'm just, my goal is to just front the money for my tuition, and I mean housing expenses is periodically, so usually on average is $15,000 to $20,000 that you're going to spend on housing on any given year for rent and food. So I think that's easier. It's harder to come up with tuition money than for living money, like your living situation. And even if you can't come up with your living situation, fuck it, just live in your van. I don't care. You know, but
honestly, in the world we live in, bro, it's like if I gotta live in my car, which they now make all these high end vans,
right?
Bro, grind.
Right. Right.
Like, your idealism of success should only be based off you, not what somebody else's ideal is.
Right.
If you feel you got to live in a van to get that master's degree, to pop out and really have big dick energy when you out here pushing your linguistics, then that's what you got to do.
Yeah.
And the only people who gonna know is the real entrepreneurs that knows. That guy is sacrificing everything today so he doesn't have to turn down anything tomorrow.
Right.
And that's really aspirational because not a lot of people can sacrifice. And it's the simple fact that you kept going because I can guarantee you at Starbucks, at Target, I can guarantee you a lot of those people in there that's management or workers, they got papers behind them. Got degrees behind them.
Yeah.
And it's like the world of not finding a job after school is not talked about enough. It's like too many kids jump into it. Like, shit, dude, I went straight to college right after high school. I went to college for 2 years until I'm sitting here talking to my pops like, yo, what am I gonna do? His idea was, nobody helped me. Why should I help you?
Right.
I'm like, damn, I'm sitting over here trying to ask my mother. And at the time, she was unable to help me. And I remember sitting down. And I'm sitting in like the tuition room and the lady's like, hey, as of right now today, you owe like $20,000. Would you like to pay cash or card? I was at this school for like 6 months. I looked at her, I said, cash or card? And then like I'm ear hustling. So in the booth next to me, I hear a similar situation. The kid's like, same thing. Hey, your kid owes $18,000. How would you like to pay it? The mom's like, I'll just put it on my card. I'll pay it right now. Matter of fact, you take check. And I'm sitting there with my mom like, dude, I don't think I could do college.
You didn't get any Cal grants, no nothing?
Nothing. Fuck. I didn't get anything. I didn't get anything because honestly, to be all the way honest, I was really just banking off I had like a couple of scholarships that I applied for, didn't get them. And then I was supposed to get help from my mother. That didn't happen at all. So I was like, you know what? Instead of trying to pursue school, I'm going to step out and just fucking grind my fucking ass off because I know if I'm not going to pursue that, then I got to pursue other aspects that my friends aren't pursuing while they're in school.
Right.
So it's like my boys out there partying. I heard you was a legend. I heard stories about David. I heard stories, dude.
From who?
I'm sitting here, I'm like, David Cruz? What's his name? Yo, shouts out to my boy Shabir.
Oh, Shabir. Yes.
He's like, I'm sitting here, I'm like, David, he's like, bro, you don't know this dude, man.
Yeah.
So yeah, he told me that you guys were in Santa Cruz partying your fucking
You know how I found out if you went to UC Santa Cruz?
Oh.
I was on the bus. Oh, like, cause the school has a loop. A loop bus. So I was on the bus just minding my own business. And then suddenly I David? And then I look up this fucking Shabir there. I'm like, dude, what the fuck are you doing here? So yeah, and we connected from there on. It was crazy.
That's my dude. That's my dude. We still talk all the time. Like, I already had him on here for like 3 episodes. Like, that's when I was talking about the guy that's the crypto genius. It's my nigga Shabir.
Shabir. That's hilarious.
Like, that's any crypto game I know, he taught me about NFTs. He's the reason I built the NFT. He's the reason I opened up an NFT store. He showed me everything. He's like, hey, you know about this? You know about that? You know about this? Game after game after game. I'm like, damn.
That's wild.
It's like, shit, bro. It's like while all the homies was at school, bro, I just honestly took a step back to just educate myself on money, educate myself on business, because it's, you can't manage money if you're illiterate when it comes to how you should treat money once you get it.
Right.
And it was like, shit, bro, I don't regret nothing. Honestly, I always like envy the friends and family I got that have 2 supportive parents for them to go to school and get BAs, go to school and get masters, and don't worry about nothing. You can come home and start all over. Like, if I fuck up, I fuck up.
But you know, that support is rare. That parent support is rare. Because in our American society, we are individualistic people where parents say, at 18, you're out of my house.
True, but one thing, I bet you your parents didn't say that.
Hell no, because we're Mexican as fuck.
That's what I always would tell my, like, I had a Hispanic homie. He's in a situation where he was literally about to go live in his friend's car in the Bay Area because his mom and dad was, quote, on my dick to get a job. Both of his parents is immigrants. Both of them got degrees in Mexico, came out here, started a life again, put their daughter to school. Their son went to, their other son, my partner's brother, went to school for 3 years, dropped out, and he doesn't want to do shit with his life. And his only thing is, bro, my parents on my dick. I'm like, do you have to pay rent? No. So what do they want from you? They told me to go to job and save my money, or if I'm gonna go to school, they'll give me money. What? Bro, do you know that after high school, as soon as I turned 18, bro, I've been living on my own since 18. As soon as I turned 18, my pops was like, yo, half of my rent is half of yours. How?
Yeah.
I'm like, what? Oh, you gonna have to start a job. I'm gonna need like $500 from you. Don't ask about using my car. And I'm sitting here like, damn, you don't really realize how much other people of color actually have they shit set up. And I'm not saying all black people is like this,
right.
Majority of us, they won't support you. Like, it's so fucked up. And it's like, with the Latin community, I envy that. Mm-hmm. With the Asian community, same exact thing. If you got a job or you at the very least going to school, we got you.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know, bro, I didn't have that. And it's like, all the homies that do, I always push them like, bro, all, like, the whole idealism of I'm successful because I got my own spot or I drive a nice car, fuck no. Because if I could be living at home right now, rent free, I would.
Yeah, dude, and let me tell you, like, I'm still living with my parents. I'm what, I'm 26?
Doesn't matter.
27. I'm still living with my parents, you know, like, I'm supporting them and whatever. Like, they asked me, they asked me a couple months ago. They were like, hey, David, would you mind, like, starting paying your insurance? And I was like, okay, cool. Like, that doesn't matter. I don't care, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, well, every 3 months, just $500. Oh, dude, I'm earning...
Every three months, $500.
And I'm like, dude, that's totally freaking fine. $500 every 3 months. You know, like, I don't have a car loan. I'm not paying rent. Well, car loan, because we cashed it out. And I actually didn't pay the whole thing. I paid $6,000, and then my dad gave me $2,500. And then, which I only paid $500 back to my mom.
Yeah, hey. Hey.
I still owe my dad $2,000. He hasn't claimed his money. So.
But see, that's Hispanic you know? Parents law right there.
And then, what is it? For that, I'm not paying rent. For food, I only pay for my food if I'm eating out or if I decide to buy groceries any given week. And then for food, oh my God, food at home, 1,000 times better than having to go out. Like there's a lot of support that I've had, and honestly, like it goes without saying that support, that family support is very, very necessary for your success. Not saying that it is the only thing that you need for your success, but it does give you a big advantage over many, many people.
1,000%.
You know? But it also goes with, you know, with your experience with college. You would have had to like struggle so much for you to obtain that paper that probably you would have been like, I don't think this is worth it, because you probably wouldn't have even used it.
Yeah.
You know, probably your necessities even after college would have been like, well, because I can't find a job within this same degree, I'm gonna go back into doing something else. And now you wasted 3-4 years into trying to pay off this piece of paper that now you're also in debt for, and you're not even using it. So like, and that's because it wasn't your time yet to obtain that degree. You know, like, yeah, sure, like it sucks, but like, there's like a time for everything. Like maybe in the future, you'll decide to go back and like, you know what, it's time. Let me do my BA now. And sure, it's gonna be easier. You don't have loans right now. You're gonna have you have a financial some sort of financial stability, I assume. You now have a family of your own that can support you. It's not you by yourself. It's now you and your wife. You know. So like, there's like now that support that you didn't have. Now you're building that support that later on is gonna help you achieve whatever was postponed. Because I don't think that it was canceled, that those plans were canceled. Maybe they're postponed or they were changed in some way or another. But you know, like I always say, like as long as the spark of like the dream doesn't die, your possibilities aren't done yet, you know, like,
oh yeah, 1,000%.
Like, doesn't matter if it looks impossible, like shoot, a dream comes true. Right now I'm living one of my dreams, right? In the sense that I wanted to earn money through my own business and while using my career. And I remember when I earned in 2019 $400, I'm like, I wonder when it's gonna be that I'm earning at least $1,000. And then in 2021, I got a contract within 2 weeks, $3,000. Boom.
That is manifestation right there at its finest.
And that's why I always say, like, you have to say, you have to write it down, you have to believe it. And it doesn't matter how hard it is, like, as long as it doesn't die, like, somehow, like, it's going to happen.
Because you gotta, look, that right there is the exact formula for the law of attraction, something that I live my life by every single day. If you speak it, you become it. You speak it, therefore you are, therefore you become. Before you go to sleep every single night, what do? You pretend like you're asleep, and then what? You actually fall asleep. Mm-hmm. All the habits of the lifestyle that you want are your habits form your habitat. So it's like, if you're somebody who wants to do linguistics, you could have easily given up all those years ago and nobody would have blamed you for it. But being head of linguistics, you started a business on the side. You didn't have to do that. Right. You also ended up merging your company with a big corporation to push it further. So regardless of, okay, David had an idea, law of attraction is one thing, but being consistent and keeping it alive every single day is another. If you want to be this big name linguistics guy, then you have to show the universe every single day that that's what you want.
Yeah.
You can't do it one day a week and be like, oh man, this shit just didn't work out. No,
right.
Because when I realized I didn't want to go to school, I realized, boom, I love art. Art is a passion. But now that I'm not in school, I got to make sure that I have multiple streams of income by the time I'm 30. And it's like, now I'm 26 and I sell NFTs. I do posters. I do logos for people. I got a bottle brand coming out. And it's like, on top of that, with my career alone, I make well over six figures.
Hell yeah.
But it's like, once I got there without a degree, and then I start seeing everybody around me, like, bro, I have a buddy who only went to high school. We're the same exact age. This motherfucker makes 80K a month. But look, his idealism is, like, for guys who can't fathom that, it's a big deal.
Right.
But I tell him that, and he's like, bro, you see that guy? He's 2 years older than us. He's making 250 a month.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how? He's like, he started a company, he pushed it. My boy literally after high school start figuring out how to build solar panels. He has a solar panel company and we're the same age.
Without being an engineer.
Without being an engineer. Just being consistent and in what you want to do.
And
that's all it is. And YouTube.
YouTube.
That YouTube University, bro. Like when I learned about crypto and stocks and investments and everything I needed for a write-off and 401ks, YouTube University.
Uh-huh.
Because unlike school, they don't go around it. That's all you learn it. You pay $1,000 to David, who has a master's degree. David's gonna teach you how to do what he did in 4 years in one, because David only needed 1 year of his 4 years.
Right.
So it's a lot of ways to get money and get that education and get forward. And we got 5 minutes left of the episode. Hearing your journey from start to finish and what you got going on, you keeping the dream alive, is extremely aspirational, because a lot of people don't understand, if you want something, you have to work for it every day.
Yeah.
If you stop working for it, you don't want it, and the universe won't give a fuck either.
Right.
So you've shown that motherfuckers who got papers to say that they can certify you in language, you showed already that that doesn't matter.
Right. Right.
Like, now you at the point where you got a big corporate and you're going to go back to school to be further. Like, that is what it takes to be in the position you want. Not a handout. And it's like, shit, you're like, it could have all been different if you had blonde hair and blue eyes. Realistically, it could have been different. It would have been 1,000% different.
Could've.
Like, think about if they didn't look at your papers and see your family history. Think about how shit could have turned out, because that way of thinking is not too far off gone. White people telling you that your Spanish is not good enough. So regardless of what you're saying, white people without not their first language, not the language they was spoken with out of the womb, they telling you that you don't know what you got going on.
That my Spanish is invaluable.
That's equivalent to them coming to, I don't know, somewhere that I grew up somewhere in the hood, and they're like, oh, this right here? This is not the ghetto. What? What are you talking about? So if that is what has been shown in the corporate world, it's not for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If, you know, just if you have to force things, think about it twice, because it may not be the right time.
1,000%.
You know, it may come later, and don't close the door. Keep it ajar. You know, don't lock it. But you can always go back to that door. Like if it's not letting you in right now, it's gonna happen later. You know.
Fuck yeah.
So I'd say don't let that dream die. It's a little ember, and you can start a whole forest fire with that.
Yeah, 1,000%, bro. This is the new episode of Hydro Affirmations. I'm here with a high-thinking individual, David Ruiz. Please check out his shop. It's
called Zerk.
David Zerk. If you went to Santa Cruz, you know why they call him Big Zerk, okay? Any information you want to give to people to find you, link up with you, get with the business?
You know, just you can send me an email at cruzdavid@radiateconsulting.coop. You can also find me at, you can find my information at my, at the website for the cooperative at Radiate Consulting Bay Area. And we can get connected, and hopefully I can get you speaking Spanish. I can either translate, interpret. We'll see how we get you connected to the Spanish community. The whole point and my whole goal is to bring these resources and sitting at the table to the Spanish speaking community.
And that's what I like to hear. That's David Ruiz. You guys know where to find him. If you can't speak Spanish, get at him. If you see a fine little Latina, she don't speak Spanish, he interprets on dates too. Get at my man, Big Zerk.
I do too. My best friend and I, we went clubbing and I had to interpret for a girl and now they're actually going out.
Hey, you heard it here. He can get you hitched in English and he can get you hitched in Spanish.
Hit me up.
Hit him up, Big Zerk. And that's what we got. Hope you guys enjoyed Cypher Sum. I have plenty of content on the way. Check out Forella Galleria on Instagram. This is a new segment I'm adding to Let's Talk Forella, but I just wanted to give insight and feedback and perspective on certain topics and point of views from everybody's life. I hope you guys enjoy the beat because we worked really hard on it. Shouts out to Little Uzi Squirt. Bah!